The election yesterday brought a big change, or will bring in January, a big change to the United States Senate. And that means, of course, new chairs and new ranking members for all of the defense subcommittees. On Pentagon Solutions today, looking at how the elections both on the House and Senate side will impact leadership in Congress on national defense and national security committees. We start with Todd Harrison, senior fellow for defense budget studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Todd, it's great to have you on the program today. We, of course, the Senate's obvious because everybody there will be a new chair or ranking member, at least compared to this Congress. The House side is a little bit more subtle, and we'll start there because with the Republicans keeping control, in theory, you would think a lot of these positions will stay the same. But in fact, as we look down the line, starting with the House Armed Services Committee, there'll be big changes next year. Chairman Buck McKeon is leaving. Congressman Mac Thornberry takes his place. What should we know about Congressman Thornberry as he takes over that committee, Todd?
Well, you know, the one thing to know about him is he has been leading an effort for the past year or so looking at acquisition reform. And so I expect that that's going to be top on his agenda when he takes over the chairmanship. Given the fact that Senator McCain will be taking over the Senate Armed Services Committee at the same time, who has also been a champion of acquisition reform and has done some new work in that area just recently, I think we should expect some sort of an acquisition reform bill out of the next Congress, probably in the next session.
Is it your sense, though, that they're all headed in the same direction, the new chairman Thornberry, the new chairman McCain, and Frank Kendall, the Defense Department undersecretary for ATL?
Well, you know, with acquisition reform, the devil's always in the details.
Right.
and so I don't think that they will all be on the same page initially. I think that they're still in the data collection mode, at least on the congressional side. McCain and Levin put together a report that was just a compendium of essays from leading experts in the field of defense acquisitions just this past summer, and they published it. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that they necessarily agree with any of the positions that were espoused in those essays, but you know, that gives you some indication of the kind of ideas that they're exploring. So I think it's too soon to tell, what specific shape acquisition reform will take out of this effort, but I think something is coming.
I want to come back to that report by the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations in the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee in a minute. But just the fact that they're moving on this, you and I have talked before about the effort that Congressman Rob Andrews led when the Democrats controlled the House and the House Armed Services Committee, and the differences between what Congressman Thornberry is looking at and what Congressman Andrews' task force looked at. And I just take away from all of these efforts that are going on now that there is more, everybody seems to agree something needs to change. And as you say, the devil is in the details. It's a matter of what that change encompasses. Do you think I'm on track there?
Yeah, I think that's right. And part of the reason I think a lot of people are latching on to acquisition reform is because they know something has to change with the internal dynamics within the defense budget. And the other big areas that are in need of reform, like closing bases, retiring legacy force structure, and rebalancing military compensation, for political reasons, those things have basically been off the table. The only politically palatable type of reform in the defense budget has been acquisition reform because it tends to mean whatever you want in whatever context you bring it up. So people naturally like it. It doesn't seem all that threatening. So I think that's part of the reason that politicians have gravitated towards acquisition reform is because they don't want to touch these other hot-button issues.
Senator McCain taking over the Senate Armed Services Committee is a scenario that he's envisioned for a long time. It probably ranks right behind being president on the list of things that he wanted to accomplish in his political career. Do we have any sense of what his other priorities might be besides acquisition reform, the things that he will want to look at on that committee, maybe from his tenure as ranking member?
Well, I think the the reality now of Senator McCain taking over as the head of the SASC, I think that is probably frightening some people in the Pentagon right now.
Yeah.
I think they're worried about the increased level of oversight and scrutiny that they're going to get from Senator McCain, and that really is what he's known for in his time in the Senate, is an incredible tenacity for oversight. If you recall, back more than a decade ago, when the Air Force was trying to press ahead with its plans to lease a new tanker for the Air Force, it was Senator McCain and his staff that uncovered what ultimately ended up being a fraud with Boeing and some senior leaders in the Air Force, and some people went to jail over that. And so I think we should expect that same kind of oversight coming out of Senator McCain as he takes over the SASC.
The Senate Appropriations Defense Subcommittee is led now by Senator Durbin from Illinois, the ranking member Senator Cochran from Mississippi. The Senator Cochran, a lot of folks expect him to get the full Appropriations Committee. Do we have any sense of a chain of seniority in the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee on the Senate side, Todd?
You know, I'm not sure who would be next up and what they're going to be jockeying for, because, you know, it depends on what other committee or subcommittee chairmanships, particular individuals might be up for. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, I'll be watching to see how that plays out in the coming days. You know, it's also interesting that a number of members of the Senate Armed Services Committee, are gone, not just, Senator Levin retiring. But you look at, Kay Hagan from North Carolina was apparently defeated.
Yes.
Also, Mark Pryor was defeated. He was a Senate Appropriations Defense Subcommittee member. So Pryor from Arkansas is out as well. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of reshuffling on the Democratic side.
And I would not be surprised to see members, new members like Senator Cotton from Arkansas, who beat Senator Pryor, and Senator Ernst from Iowa, who's Army National Guard veteran, try to get their make their way onto the Armed Services Committee. It'd be a logical fit, I would think.
Yeah, and so we won't really know that until the next few weeks, when all of that internal Senate politicking starts to take place, and some of it starts to leak out.
Todd Harrison of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. You mentioned the report that Senators McCain and Levin put out as members of the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations in the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, and you're too humble. You mentioned that a lot of experts submitted testimony for that. You're one of them. And we'll link to your contribution to that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Todd, you wrote to them about competition. Just in the time that we have left, minute or two remaining, what are some of the main points that you wanted Senators Levin and McCain to understand about competition, Todd?
Well, first, when I was referring to experts, I meant everyone else.
Of course you did. Like I said, you're too humble.
No, I was just trying to point out that competition is not the panacea that a lot of people make it out to be. Competition does not always work in defense acquisitions, because the defense acquisition environment is nothing like a free market. You know, for major weapon systems that are unique to DOD, now, so I'm narrowing it down there quite a bit, but the big ticket items that DOD tends to buy, DOD is the only customer, and even if there are foreign sales, it has to go through the government to be approved. And so, you know, you've got a single buyer, and then on the industry side, we're already starting with, you know, only one, two, or three vendors in many subsectors of the defense industry, and the quantities at which we're buying weapon systems, because of their cost, the unit costs, are so low that it does not always make sense to have more than one producer at a time. And so we may, you know, try to give the appearance of competition by paying two different companies to do redundant development work and develop, redundant capabilities and production lines. But then ultimately, if we're going to down-select only one of them, we're losing that investment, and we're not even getting competition in the long run. And even if we try to do things like split the award so we can keep two production lines running, then we lose cost efficiencies because, you know, it's the learning curve effect is well understood in industry. The more times you build an item, the better and more efficient you get at building it, so the cost comes down. When you split an award, you just lose learning because neither company can get as far down the learning curve because they aren't building as many items. And so, you know, while there may be some competitive pressure from competition that helps bring down cost and spur innovation and other factors that I'm not talking about here, the added cost of redundant development work and reduced learning in many cases can offset those savings. So we end up spending more by trying to compete systems that we shouldn't be competing in the first place.